Welcome to part three in the conclusion of our podcast with the Metropolitan Police Department with Commander Ralph Ennis of the Technical Services Department, Derek Meeks, Director of the Body-Worn Camera Program and Technology Innovation, and Anita Ravishankar, Metropolitan Police Research Fellow.
Recently read a couple other studies on use of force actually going up in a couple places. Do you guys, as part of this study, since it's ongoing, ever compare some of those and tie in some of the interesting things to see if it's actually occurring in the district?
So in kind of keeping with the pure scientific method approach here, we haven't looked at our data yet. We will obviously once the trial wraps up, but we didn't want to prejudge anything along those lines. But kind of to your point about use of force going up in some jurisdictions, I think this is one of the reasons we decided to look at use of force, not just holistically, but also in terms of the serious instances and the minor instances. Because I think one of the phenomena we are seeing in other jurisdictions is that reporting is going up, even though maybe actual frequency of use of force has not really changed. And so because, you know, for most jurisdictions, use of force measures are based on officer self-reports, we wanted to try to account for that. And that's why we kind of split up the serious versus the more kind of other uses of force.
In some of these other studies, I understand, are aggregate studies where they're taking information from police departments from various locations and aggregating the information together. You can imagine external factors in their department culture can impact that data widely depending on where the information is coming from. Whereas with our, the way we're doing it is it's just us, everybody's under the exact same conditions. So we're excited about the findings because it'll be more pure, so to speak, from a layman's term, or we believe our findings will be.
It seemed to be a really neat opportunity to fold in this approach because we had the opportunity right at pretty much the onset of the deployment. Speaking as the person responsible for some of the deployment, it was only slightly more of a challenge because we had clarity in exactly what we wanted to do and how we wanted to do it. We just had to spread out the overall deployment activities over essentially two different cycles. One at the beginning where half of the officers got cameras, the treatment group, and then the other now at the end of the year for all of the, what previously were the control group.
Well, great. Thank you for adding some light into that question. Some of the other agencies that have research partners have ended up using some of those researchers for help in policy formation and some other. Do you guys allow your researchers to assist and work in other areas, or are they focused directly on this project that's going on right now?
So Anita is mainly focused on the body camera program, but she does help with some other inquiries as they come up. Nothing too major because at the end of the day, we want to get this right first. And her work is monumental, sifting through all the data that she has to sift through and cleaning it. So she doesn't have a ton of time outside of this process. But I will say as far as the policy formation is, let me just highlight this one more time, is that I think that you need to have a solid policy before you do anything. And you need to be sure that you include everyone, including your researchers, in those discussions. When coming up with your policy, because that's ultimately going to lead and dictate how your program either succeeds or fails. It's very important that your program works right out of the hopper and that you have as very few issues as possible and that you've thought everything through. It gives credibility to the agency, to the program, and to the entire process. If you do not think this through and you start a program, dealing with these different issues as they're coming along, and they end up making the media, is going to derail everything. So it really is vitally important to make sure that you properly plan up front.
And I know Anita's going to want to talk about the lab. Before she does, I just want to give her a note. It was interesting for me sitting on command staff meetings, watching folks listen to her and respond to the information she was bringing to the table. It seemed to provide additional context for decision making and things along those lines. And while, as Commander Ennis says, she's primarily focused on the body camera effort, already there's been a number of discussion and a growing amount of interest in having her kinds of service in a variety of places.
Yeah, so one of the things I just wanted to add is that just being an in-house researcher makes a big difference, I think. I know at times the research partners from the outside will work with, you know, a lieutenant or someone in the department to kind of help them collect the data and things along those lines. The good news there is that police departments do have a lot of data just that they collect by default of record keeping, but it's often much harder to figure out where all that data is residing and how it can be used to measure outcomes that we care about for this study, as well as kind of more big picture MPD operations. And I think that's kind of one of the ways I see the value add of having actually someone in-house. And one more thing I just wanted to add about the study actually, that is also, I think, a unique thing about MPD's approach to this is that all of what we talked about in terms of the study design, the randomization protocol, the outcomes we are going to be measuring and how exactly we're defining them, all of that has been documented in what we call a pre-analysis plan, which lays out kind of all of that information up front. And this will be made public. It will be posted to the Open Science Framework website very shortly. And the goal here is really to promote transparency and the credibility of the study, and also to engage our stakeholders again. So we really take this stakeholder engagement thing very seriously from the policy development phase all the way through to how we actually study the effects of body cameras in DC.
Sure. Anita, checking this, the lab is intended to kind of provide this service at large, right, where it's providing more scientific and research-based information around, so for the sake of policy formation?
Absolutely. The goal is really to provide that evidentiary basis for decision makers.
So while this is the first instance and certainly a very large, significant one, it's kind of the starting point, I think, for a lot more of this across the city of D.C., which to me, that's an incredibly meaningful thing because it means that policymakers are having increasing access to analysis and information to really help ensure that they're going in the right direction. I think it's a really neat innovation on D.C.'s behalf.
Thank you, guys. Thank you all for adding that and explaining that process a little bit more and giving us some insight into that. And we look forward to seeing that report when it comes out. And Commander Ennis had talked about basically how important policy was. So I think we sort of covered that, but you can elaborate if you want. But what advice would the three of you give to other agencies that are looking at implementing body-worn cameras?
I'll start, and then I'll turn it over. My main advice is to know what you're getting yourself into, and you need to follow some common sense measures for deploying a major change in practice, and body cameras are a huge change in practice for most police departments. And I don't mean know what you're getting yourself into in a manner as to deter or say people should not deploy body cameras. I believe in body cameras. DC believes in body cameras. I'm saying that to say is before you start the process, you need to look at the entire landscape and then make your decisions. You need to take the time to collaborate with other BWC agencies to outline your planning process. You don't want to do things like try to implement a program before working with your stakeholders and developing a good policy. You need to figure out who those stakeholders are and you need to get them involved. You know, every place is a little different, but you need to, like, whatever your landscape is, make sure that everybody who has a stake in this process, that you include them. You need to consider things like, you know, are you under a mayor or do you have a city manager? Do you have elected council, you know? And you need to make sure that anybody who can put a roadblock in your way for the lack of their understanding what's going on is informed from the outgo and is involved in the process from the get-go so that they feel included, they have the information, and you're less apt to get a roadblock put up. It's essential, I cannot state this enough, for police departments to include their unions if you are a unionized department and to make sure that you listen to what their concerns are and you get their feedback and, you know, that you include their concerns so that they're with you standing from the get-go at your meetings and back in your program. And you need to go ahead.
And actually, to that point, it is because of the support, part of the reason of the success of DC's program, of MPD's program here, is because of the union support, and also in the member support as well. This was very broadly adopted, and I think that is a kind of a different experience than what other areas might have. So to me, that's a fairly significant item right there.
Yeah, you need to make sure you're including your other partners in government, your medical community, your fire departments, your civil liberty, your special interest groups, you know, the civil liberties groups. All of those people need to know what's going on and stay engaged throughout the entire process. And the third thing, and I can't state this enough, is that you need to involve everyone internally to the police department on your program and in your meetings. At MPD, we had, from very early on, an internal BWC committee. That committee included decision makers from every major part of our department. It literally touches, the BWC program literally touches every single aspect of your police department in areas you never would think it touches. So we would have meetings biweekly in the chief's conference room with 15, 20 people around the table just talking through issues, making progress every single week towards our goal of deployment. And what we did is we took the feedback we received internally, and then we would brief the chief once a week or once every couple weeks on everything new that came up and proposed solutions to some of the problems and things. And what that did was it ensured that when we rolled the program out, nobody was surprised, that no part of the department had additional work that they hadn't considered, or there was some roadblock because we hadn't considered the program impacting some other part of the department. So that's very, very, very important. And lastly, I want to say you got to look in the other department's experiences so you're keenly aware of all the components and the requirements that a BWC brings. I'm saying that because there are all kinds of things that you wouldn't consider. It's so much more than just putting cameras out. Once you have cameras out, you know, you're responsible for all the footage. You're responsible for making sure that it all reaches where it's supposed to. You're responsible if you have behavior that's being captured on these cameras, that if it's bad behavior, that you know it's there and that you're addressing it. So what you need to do is you need to have people on staff that can audit video, that can make sure that they're being tagged correctly and retained for the proper time. You need to make sure that there's people there to review video for investigation. You don't want to have a case to where you have an investigation or, God forbid, a serious use of force, where the investigation says one thing and the body camera video says another thing. You need to sync all those things together. And lastly, you need to have, if you are from a place that has, you know, a significant FOIA burden or an open government burden, you need to make sure that you have proper staff to handle the request for the footage. So it's so much more than just putting body cameras on people and telling them to turn it on. The back end for maintaining the program is enormous. And just as a little reference, in D.C. we're going to have 3,200 cameras when it's all said and done. And right now we're in the process of hiring 12 coordinators to help us manage the program. That's an additional 12 civilian employees. We hired 5 new FOIA specialists to assist with the FOIA burden and to help coordinate redactions for the videos. So there is it's a large burden to lift, but if you do so, you do it properly, I think you're going to have a program that's effective for the community and your department, and I think you'll be very happy with it. We are extremely happy with our department, our program here in D.C. Nita, do you have anything?
I would just say, as an advocate for research here, a lot of police departments don't have a ton of internal research capacity of this kind. But a lot of them are also pretty close to universities that do have a lot of research capacity and a lot of folks who are interested. So the police department shouldn't be deterred by not having that in-house capacity. Certainly, it is not terribly hard to get in contact with that. And folks are definitely interested in doing this type of research on the academic side. And so one thing I would say is if you are looking to implement a body-worn camera program, integrating the research piece at the outset is certainly a way to keep your costs low and also learn a lot about what the cameras are actually doing in your community, which, as we discussed earlier, our communities are all different. We have different use of force standards and things like that. So we're not all kind of the same. Every study is not going to have the same results everywhere else. So we kind of strongly encourage other departments to contribute to that knowledge base by doing this type of work if it is feasible for them.
Magnitude is significant, setting achievable goals along the way. and then kind of keeping focus on keeping the program alive. This is something I think the thing that we'll find is that body cameras will have a fairly profound impact on policing. And as a consequence, it's probably as much of a journey as it is a destination.
Well, thank you all for participating today and providing us with insight on this important topic and how it affects a large agency like the Metro PD, and especially a complicated agency like the Metro PD. Lots of moving parts here, so thank you for sharing your insight on this.
You're welcome.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We encourage all law enforcement, justice, and public safety leaders whose agencies are interested in learning more about the implementation of body-worn cameras to visit the body-worn camera toolkit at www.bja.gov/BWC. The toolkit offers a variety of resources that agencies can use with the help to adopt and use for community engagement, policy development, data collection, also training and educational purposes. We also encourage listeners to share and promote these resources with your colleagues and staff. Lastly, all these resources in the toolkit have been designed as your resources, so please submit ideas for new content through the BWC support link at the bottom of the homepage. This is Todd Maxwell of the Bureau of Justice Assistance Body-Worn Camera Team signing off. Thank you all for joining us today.